the Approaching the Natural podcast with Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. Sid Garza Hillman here, your host of this here podcast. Welcome one and all. If you're just joining me for the first time, I'm glad you made it. 156 episodes in, more on that in a minute. If you're just coming here because you've been here before, then you know how I roll here, right? There's no mystery. There's no mystery. This is a podcast dedicated. I am right now just, I can say this truthfully, I'm dedicating my life right now to this, what's going on here with the podcast and my job at the Stanford Inn, running their wellness center and being the nutritionist there, to my work with private clients, to my, most importantly right now, the podcast and the YouTube channel. I have a message to get out, and this podcast serves as a, for many, a weekly reminder among just information and perspectives and conversations and opinions, and it's a tool of engagement is what I would call it, a tool of engagement. This is maybe an hour that you spend per week just diving in a little deeper than maybe you usually have time for, because I know if you're like me, then day to day, it's not, you know, you don't have a lot of time. So this, maybe this hour in your car, rather than listening to all the bad news that abounds, you're checking this out. And then maybe you're listening to other podcasts about diet and fitness and the particulars of training plans and all that awesome stuff. And then you come back here as sort of a backdrop to why you do everything else, to literally why you do everything else. So that's what I come here every week to discuss. I am a certified nutritionist and author of Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto. I may have some good news coming up about my next book, which I don't have to, I can't tell you yet now. Sorry for the cryptography. Sorry to study maps. That's cartography. You think I don't know that? You think I don't freaking know? Yes, I do. But hopefully I'll have some news pretty soon. And that could be kind of an interesting shift for me if that means that's happening. And so, boom. In the meantime, real quick skate by of a few little announcements, and I always just scatter them through. But this episode, I have a meal plan that I launched with Matt Frazier, the No Meat Athlete. He and I had a little podcast thing we did this morning for members. It's a very affordable meal plan system, really more of a system. In fact, the little thing we did this morning was really about, you know, what happens to all of us, I think, which is that, you know, when presented with something in writing in front of us, we have this incredible urge to just follow it perfectly. I know I do. And so, you know, part of what we did in Health Made Simple is to maintain a personal connection to the members via live Q&As and these podcasts to really drive home repeatedly the message that we think it's the opposite of what people should actually do day to day, with little exception, which is that we think people should ease their way in, find if it's one meal a week, hugely successful. So based on feedback, people are like, I'm only able to do this, I'm only able to do that. It's like, no, wait, you're able to do that. That's amazing. So that's what that's about. If you're interested in that kind of deal, nomeatathlete.com/meal-plan-system. Okay. But more importantly than that, this podcast in general is brought to you by you guys. And I started saying this a couple episodes ago because I finally realized that I was like, this is totally what's happening here, because I don't know, without your feedback and without your donations and just in general support and reviews on iTunes, like I would have shut this thing down a long time ago. And I listen to podcasts myself, and rarely do I ever write some, like, a podcast host and go like, you're freaking thing's awesome. Like, and I should, and I think about it in the car and I go, oh, when I get back, I'm going to donate to this podcast. And I just always forget. So that people have made an effort to do that. And for some reason over the last couple of weeks, I've gotten, you know, an exponential growth in donations. And I really appreciate it. It is real, and it helps me, you know, just in a very practical way, but also in an emotional way. It's like getting the emails, getting the reviews that are coming in, and they're coming in more too into iTunes and everything is huge. It's huge. And so thank you. I can't thank you enough. And also, you know, bought other stuff. Like, people bought some stuff off my website, and t-shirts and mugs and bracelets and custom signed books. You can get all that at sidgarzahillman.com. Okay. So anyway, this is just all by way of saying you guys are awesome, and you bring it and I bring it, and it's so far so good, I think. Right? Okay. I did get one feedback and was like, he wanted to listen to, I think he's in Scotland, actually. I think I met him over there, but he's been listening and sort of binge listening, and he's been trying to get to the older episodes. And he was like, there's this other podcast on iTunes that has all of their episodes before the most recent 50. And I don't know if anybody knows how to do that. I don't know how to do that. And even like Rich Roll's podcast, like there, as far as I know, it's only the most recent 50, but there, if there's a workaround there, let me know. Otherwise, you can go to SidGarzaHillman.com and get all the episodes starting at episode one, and you can download them and stuff. So it's like, maybe that's an option for you to do that and get that on your phone. However you do. I'm not a technologist. Okay. I'm a cartographer. Okay. I'm not a technologist. I don't know what you guys, the expectations you have. I don't know. But thank you for everybody for just being here. Okay. All social media, Sid Garza Hillman. Boring. YouTube, not boring. Two more videos this week. No Gurus is Good Gurus. And Doing What a Dad Does. Two little videos I posted. I'm doing 2 weeks still. And if you haven't subscribed to YouTube channel, shame, 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 shame. You know, I'm big on guilt and shame. Always think people should feel more guilt and more shame. That's how I roll. Those are things I value very, very much. Guilt and shame. If you can make somebody feel bad about themselves, by gum, make that happen. I will watch the Doing What a Dad. I mean, watch the videos. I'm just saying. But this week, for some reason, I think because I got asked to assist a soccer. My kids started soccer last weekend. And so one of the coaches was out of town. And so the head coach said, hey, can you, you know, I've done it before. So he's like, hey, can you help? Like, because they split the kids up into two fields because there's so many people on our team. This is interesting. Not at all. Anyway, I assisted coach. And I had this very like dad moment of just like, I'm a dad. And it's just kind of a weird thing for me still at 47. I shot a little video about that. But one of the things is I'm also, my 12-year-old daughter is, she seems to be totally open to it, but I am like launching certain things into her reality, like 80s films, for instance. Like she's run the Say Anything, done. Breakfast Club, done. Some Kind of Wonderful, done. Pretty in Pink, done. The next one was 16 Candles, and I have not seen that in years, and I showed it to her, and my wife and I are watching it with her, and I'm going, holy crap, didn't see that coming. And more than any of the other ones, and I mentioned this, I may kind of tease about it in the YouTube video, Doing What a Dad Does, but man, some just blatant racism, sexism, it's just amazing. And I remember watching that at 14, just normal, just, you know. So if you're wondering if that's true or not, I have three words to drive that point home. Ready? Long duck dong. Long duck dong. If that doesn't summarize the sort of the ethic of 16 Candles, I don't know what. Interesting story. I used to be an actor, for those of you who don't know, back in the day. And I did an episode of ER, which is a show that used to be on. It was a good show. But anyway, I was in one episode and I had a scene with freaking Getty Watanabe, who was Long Duck Dong. And I had to really fight every urge, talk about the me, not me, of just drooling over him. And I just was like, hey, hi, nice to meet you. Getty, is it? Is it? Oh, what a pleasure. Is this your first gig? Anyway, okay, moving on. So a lot of you have asked about the children thing, and I know that I touched on it last week, but fully coincidentally, I had done an episode, I had been asked, there's an episode called a podcast called Plant Trainer Podcast, a really nice couple, I think they're in Canada. And they asked me, they met me when I spoke in Texas last March, I don't know, at the Health Fest in Marshall, Texas. They met me there, and I remember meeting them, but anyway, they emailed me and said, hey, we'd love to have you on talking about kids, and I said, fantastic. So I did it, I think in July, and they said, oh, it'll post later. I did it in August, I can't remember, but anyway, it posted this week, like just kind of weird because I just talked about the kid thing last week, I believe. I don't really remember. But anyway, it's about then. So that's there. It's the Plant Trainer Podcast. I go pretty deep on the parenting thing with them, and they're very active in that realm too, and in a hugely good way. Like they're doing like groups and family stuff. Very cool. Cool couple, fun. It was fun. So anyway, if you're interested in checking that out and you're interested in the child side of things, planttrainers.com. is their website, planttrainers.com. It's all one word, Plant Trainers, and it's two T's. Like, they don't share a T. Plant, and then new T, Trainers. Got it? Planttrainers.com. I'll put it in the show notes of this week's episode, so if you're interested in that, boom. All right. what's going on with me? Well, you know that my non-training of my training is happening, and I'm sticking with it. Bree was not feeling, her leg was not quite there, although it's on the mend. Sid was doing another 50 miler because I think she just does them 8 times a week now. And so I was on my own this weekend, but did an 8 miler, felt really good. I'm feeling great. I cannot complain. I am doing now. Here's the thing. I'm still in that Wim Hof thing. I'm going to kind of give you little updates every week with that because now I'm in week 4. And it is bringing in more yoga. There was yoga in week 2, and then there wasn't anymore, and I didn't know if that was going to be it for that. Now there's like yoga way beyond. And I used to practice yoga in Los Angeles for years and just stopped when, you know, kids and moving up here and where I live and just what it was. I've taken one yoga class since I've moved into Mendocino, which was 10 years ago, literally one yoga class. So bringing that back in has been amazing. It could be, in my mind, more on that in a second, but boy, is the cold therapy, the yoga, the breathing techniques, like it's, my running is feeling like I'm running on all cylinders. I'll put it that way. I'm just clicking and I'm not pushing it, but I'm just feeling good. I don't know what to tell you. It's been a really good thing. It's a little bit of a time deal. And so I'm kind of playing with that a little bit, but at the same time doing some research, because this is part of my, you know, job, is to try these things out. Again, I'm not endorsing. I'm not there yet. I'm going to finish the whole program. If it really does the deal, like it shows it, like it seems like it is, then I'll maybe, you know, make a full on, like, you guys should freaking try this out, but not yet. However, some of the research I've been doing on the side because of my own curiosity and practice has been on the cold therapy thing. It's very interesting to me. My personal experience, which was then validated in one of the interviews I heard with this guy, Ray Cronise, who I think I've mentioned, but he's done a ton of research on cold therapy. But some of the cold stuff I do, which is basically a cold shower, I do at night only because my schedule is just kind of what it is. And so I do it at night. Kids go to bed. Lisa goes to bed, and I stay up and do, you know, the 30 minutes to an hour of this deal, ending with a cold shower, and then I get in bed. I've been having amazing sleep, and I feel really energized getting out of the shower. But I fall into this most relaxing, wonderful, blissful kind of sleep, and it's kind of weird. Like I felt the first couple of nights, I thought, oh man, it's gonna be hard for me to sleep, but then Ray Cronise was talking about this exact thing, that in the morning it'll actually energize you, and then in the evening it'll actually help you sleep. And it has to do with a little bit with the circadian rhythms, which are these sort of natural cycles of day and night and sleep and wake and this whole deal, which, by the way, grounding, don't get me started, but that's kind of locked into that whole deal. More on that maybe later. But right now it's totally interesting just in terms of this other fact, which is cold therapy has been shown to have the same physiological results in the body. It's not totally the same, but similar to endurance training. There's like some similar things happening, like the body producing more mitochondria, which has to do with energy creation and the efficiency of the body to produce energy. And cold therapy does that too. And exercise does that too. Depression, mood altering kinds of effects of cold therapy plus endurance exercise, totally interesting to me. But you know, neither here nor there. Okay. Well, not neither here nor there. I mean, it's kind of cool. But anyway, so that's what I'm doing. And with yoga, and I'm doing yoga poses I haven't done in 10 years and still banging them out like I never forgot. So it's pretty exciting for me. I will also say this fact. I'm still in the kind of messing around with my meal scheduling. I'm trying, like, not training anymore. I'm also not scheduling meals much anymore at all. So for instance, like today, which is kind of a dial back day, I didn't eat a single thing until 5 p.m. and just playing with that. I mean, I had access to food, obviously, because we all have access to food just in an absolutely amazing way. So it wasn't like I was forcing myself not to, but I wanted to see what it sort of felt like. And this is the second time I've done it in 2 weeks of just drinking water. And the times that I would have sort of minor, what I would interpret in the past as hunger, would just go away. Usually when I drink a glass of water, they would just go away. Now, I will tell you this, excuse me, this very, very important fact. I'm not calorically deficient. I know I'm not calorically deficient. Here's how I know. Because yesterday, I ate for three. I mean, I was like pregnant yesterday. I might as well have been pregnant with twins. The amount of just sheer calories that I put down was nutty nut nut. I went for an 8 mile run, and I mean, it wasn't like off the charts in terms of, you know, like, Sid, you need help, but it was almost like that. And it was like, I need to stop. And I stopped at like 8 p.m. because I was like, I can't do it anymore. I'm not trying to set a record here. So this morning, waking up and feeling like, okay, let me see how long I can just sort of drink the water. And it wasn't really until like around noon when I started to feel a little wonky in the stomach, and then just drank some water, gone. I mean, full energy. And I will tell you, mental clarity, like nobody's business. And again, I'm not in, I'm not running the risk of being calorically deficient. I'm going to make up the calories. I just don't do it every day, all the time. Now, little word of warning here. The body calibrates to what you do most of the time. You guys know, if you've listened to my podcast before, I talk about what you do most of the time. That's the only thing that counts. It does not calibrate to one-off. It doesn't even calibrate to moments of a lot of stress. It doesn't make huge adjustments. It gets through that stress. Now, if you have that level of stress every day, yeah, the body will weaken, and it will weaken because it can't deal with that level of stress, and it will also just try to adjust to that level of stress the best that it can. But in a more subtle way, it just adjusts to your eating habits, your movement habits. The body's always just trying to hit that nice little allostasis kind of balance in all of its systems and all its organs to sort of do the best it can day to day with minimal wear and tear. More on that in a minute. But we're conservation vessels. We try to conserve. Our minds try to conserve stress. Our bodies try to conserve energy. We try to not expend out and burn out. It doesn't make sense evolutionary for us to just go like a bat out of hell mentally and physically every day and then just be susceptible to sickness and danger all the time, which doesn't work. So we play on that in the modern world, but more on that in a minute. The point is that I want you to know that I have, in my own personal experience with the things that I've done, and I've experimented with fasting in the past, water fasting, I mean, like real fasting, and also the so-called juice cleanses and all that kind of crap. I've experimented with that. It's a controlled thing for me. Here's what I mean. Don't stop eating because you heard that on podcasts I stop eating on a given day, and then you faint, and then you write me a nasty email because you're used to eating 42 times per day, but stop because you heard episode 156 of an email of a podcast, and all of a sudden you're just shutting the freaking eating thing down. And maybe the day before you didn't eat that much, and so now you've got blood sugar issues and you're going to blame these things on me. The body becomes more efficient over time. What I'm experimenting with is becoming efficient enough that in the absence of calories, my body becomes a better energy producer. That is what I'm experimenting with. The interesting thing for me doing this right now, by the way, is that I'm also in training. So the common sense in my own brain and my own training nutritionally and with fitness and all the research I've done over the years is to say, don't do this while you're training for something. Like, that's not what you don't go on a, don't change things while you're training. But this training is about changing things. This experiment isn't, it's actually finishing the 50K, I got to tell you, is sort of secondary. Like, I want to see if I can pull off the 50K in this context. But what's really interesting to me is really changing things up and making things purposefully irregular and long enough to where that becomes my most of the time to see what my body does in that sense. And I will tell you that through cold therapy, which makes the body a little more efficient metabolism-wise to burn fat. It's documented. This isn't my opinion. I do feel like my running is becoming more efficient, that my energy levels during the day are more even throughout the day. They're a little less of the, I need an espresso, which, you know, some days it's like that. Today I had an espresso at like 2:30-ish, didn't even finish it. All of a sudden I looked at my desk, I was like half done, and I just blew it off. So kind of cool. Okay. So I'll keep you posted on that stuff. It's just an interesting thing. I would prefer anybody not do anything about this right now and maybe just listen to what happens when I do it and see what you think. The body, like I said last week with the make allowances, the body is designed to handle times where we're not eating. In fact, with my mental clarity effects of this happening, I am feeling like some days the less I eat, the less energy is expended in dealing with that food, and it somehow is becoming, I have like a more of a clarity of mind during the day when I'm not dealing with food or thinking about food and also not having to digest food. I'm like kind of clicking, right? So this speaks to what this could possibly be, and I'm open to this occurring, which is it could be the placebo. I mean, it could be a placebo effect. I mean, I did some reading on this before I started, and people said, you know, here's what my experiences were. I felt more energy. I felt more sleep, you know, sleeping better, you know, that kind of stuff. I do think, you know, given the work I've done to read about this thus far, there's some very real measured science behind cold therapy. It's not new. It's been around for a while. There is now documented science on Wim Hof himself with regard to his breathing and what it does to the alkalinity short term in the blood and all these kinds of things. However, at the same time, it could be placebo. And I sort of feel like over time, at least this is the perception I have, that we sort of diminish the placebo effect. We sort of go like, it's the placebo effect. And I'm like, holy crap, it's the placebo effect. Like we tend to like sort of dismiss it as like a, oh, it's the placebo. They got sugar pills and they made a change. You know, their bodies changed. And it's like, that's amazing. And that is also documented. I mean, again, there's been studies showing the placebo effect in a very, very real measured measured physiological differences in the body kind of way. This isn't, again, not new. It's just what it is, but we don't really, that's my entire focus. And so, of course, I'm going to bring it to the work that I do as the practitioner that I am, which is this, be it placebo or not, the fact of the matter is when we have expectations in ourselves and in our lives, sometimes the mind can make shifts in the physical body itself to make those things a reality, which is why I talk about, by the way, the first task always, the who am I truly, and write it as if it's in present tense, because this is the expectation that you make, and it's real. But again, we don't create these expectations of ourselves because we are already living lives that sometimes aren't measuring up and we're not that happy about what we're doing. And we don't create new expectations on ourselves because that the perception of that, of course, is just like, oh my gosh, on top of everything else, I'm going to pressure myself to expect more from myself. I'm barely getting through the day. Enter the small steps. You create a very high expectation of yourself. I talked about it last week with the irritability. Like I don't ever, my expectation is that I'm never going to be irritable walking in the door, and at the same time know that I am. But I like that expectation because I think that that's part of the small stepper's whole big picture, which is that placebo or not, it does affect change when you become very clear about what your expectations are about your life. I think that with children, it's the same thing. When I have expectations of my children very clearly to like do their homework every day or whatever that is, I think that they will then come up to the mark a little bit better when those expectations are very, very clear. When it's not focus on what they're not doing, but this is just an expectation. I have an expectation of this, and it becomes this sort of like very normal, very non like wide swing kind of like big deal thing. It's like, no, that's the expectation. Like we have an expectation that our kids are going to go to college. We don't make a big deal about it. We don't go like, if you don't want to go, like, and they may not go, but it's not a discussed thing. It's not like a rule or like massive disciplinary. It's like, oh, just, it's an expectation. Like it's just understood. How much of your life and what you want to achieve in your life is just sort of understood? Like, yeah, I'm going to get to a healthy weight. I mean, that's my expectation. My expectation is that I'm going to get to a healthy weight. It's very hard to say in your own mind those kinds of things, especially when today maybe you didn't take any action to make that a reality. And so that's why I come here every week to maybe have you guys play with that exercise a little bit, to say, let me play with the idea of what I really expect of myself, what I expect of my spouse even, what I expect of my relationships, what I expect out of my job. And to play with that and put that in your life as a way to say, I'm very clear about this, and make it over time so normal that maybe things start to form around that, and maybe your actions start to subtly at first maybe reflect those very, very clear expectations. But make no mistake, the expectations have to be clear. You have to be clear about the life you want to live before you can start trying to freaking live the life you want to live. So, you know, 90% of my I don't know about 90, 72.5% of my goal and practice is to get people first to be very clear about their own expectations of their own lives and the very clear picture of their lives. And then they can start to discuss the implementation. That's, you know, ultimately where it's at is the implementation, but not without a goal, right? Okay. So how powerful the mind? I mean, how powerful the mind that we have these energetic and physiological shifts from mental alone, from somebody saying, if you take this pill, this is a blood pressure pill. When you take this pill, it's going to lower your blood pressure. And you go, oh, right on. And you believe it at your core because this is, you don't know you're an experiment. You take that pill and you go, hey, my blood pressure, and your blood pressure comes down only to find out that you just took a pill that has no drug in it at all, that it's a sugar pill. So what is it that lowered your blood pressure? You lowered your blood pressure. There's an extreme power. And again, I'm not discounting Western medicine. I'm not discounting anything. I'm just saying there may be totally appropriate time. You can't placebo your effect into a surgery. But I do think that the mind plays a role, and to sort of dismiss it or to diminish that is really cheating ourselves out of the extreme power that occurs from taking on our lives, or at least to say, oh, I might as well not do anything because it's just all in my head. Yeah, you're damn right. It's all in your head. It's all in your freaking head. So all this stuff that I'm going through with the Wim Hof thing, a lot of it could be in my head. I don't know. I don't care either because it's not ruining my life to do it. I don't have to leave my family and go live in Nepal for 6 months and do it that way. I'm doing it at night before bed and I'm having great freaking sleeps. Like I'm sleeping hourly, probably less hours than usual because I'm doing this thing at night and I'm feeling more rested than ever in my memory. That is a fact. And again, this could again be placebo. Don't know, don't care. All I know is it's working for me. Okay. Sometimes, you could do something and sort of connect a sort of a superstitious effect to it. Like, I noticed that when I tap my leg 43 times in the morning, the sun comes up. So therefore, I just want the sun to come up. So I just tap my leg 43 times. I think there's a little bit of, debilitating effect of that kind of like, correlation versus causation kind of effect. That's for you to weigh. For me, the cost of me doing this program is not great. It's not a huge thing. It feels good. There's meditation involved. There's yoga involved. I feel relaxed. My running has been improving. So I ain't rocking the frickin' boat. Okay? End of story. That's it. That's the conclusion of my diatribe. I ain't rocking the frickin' boat. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And a whole bunch of other metaphors that are totally not relevant. And totally just as a really bad segue, just FYI, I'm running the North Face 50K on December 3rd. It's not that bad of a segue, right? I was talking about running. And so, by the way, I've been training with the food stuff, like Clif Bar. I've been using Clif Bars just as here's why. Because they're pretty intense on the macronutrient level, on the caloric level. Like, they're just decent amount of protein, like more than I would ever eat at a sitting. Fat and carbohydrate. Like, it's just all there. It's 260 calories at just one shot, just one Clif Bar, more calories than I ever did per hour during my ultras that I've done. And so part of me is just, again, stretching that out to see how do I do on that. And so, yeah, during my 8-miler, just ate a Clif Bar, not even half, just ate the whole thing. Just like, okay, let me see what my body does in this regard, and had absolutely zero problem at all. In fact, I had a negative split, which means I finished the last half of the run faster than the first half, and I ate the Clif Bar halfway through. So I had zero problem, ton of energy, and just great. So it's all good. I'll keep on keeping on. Okay, got a nice email today from a girl who is training for her first marathon, wants some advice on that. Well, this is what I'm doing. Now, I'm not advising her to do that. I'm advising her what I would have done 10 years ago when I started kind of getting into this a little bit. Run slow, take care of your nutrition, because that's just as crucial as any running you could ever do for a training thing. But I can eat whatever I want because I'm running all this mileage now. Now I don't have to worry about what I eat. Right. Let me tell you guys, when you go in a training plan, you have to worry about what you eat more than ever before. If you want to be long-term successful, it's just what it is. The body is going under more stress when you train than when you don't, and you need to take care of it. The messaging, treat yourself well. Not restriction and now I can't do this and I can't do that. But yeah, right on. I'm just ramping this up. I'm going to really self-care here because this is fun for me and I enjoy it. My umbrella goal is that I want to live a happy, healthy life, and running a race sounds really fun to me and it's a challenge and it's uplifting. And so I really want to be nice to my body and my mind during this process because I'm worth freaking taking care of, right? That's the self-esteem, self-confidence aspect of what I do here every week. Dig? All right. Subject of this week's podcast, you guys, just self-congratulatory, Sid. I don't even have to say the word correctly because this is episode 156. This is my actual third year anniversary. 52 weeks times three. You guys digging this? I mean, I am. It's September 12th. My technical first episode was done on September 11th of 2013, 9 months almost after my book came out. And here I am. 3 years later, did not see that this would ever, I did not know. I literally jumped in and said, let's just see where this takes me. I had no plan. I didn't know where it was going. I had the ideas. I had my approach that I had. Didn't know the amount of people that were going to come on to this thing and write me emails and about how their lives are changing and all this amazing stuff. I did an episode of gratitude at episode 150. So I'm not milking this thing till the freaking cows come home. You already know that I'm grateful to all of you. You know that, okay? But I wanted to stress this point. This podcast is hard work. And this isn't to me go, you guys, this is so hard. It is, but it is. This is hard work. And it made me think about this fact, well, at least what I believe to be a fact. Living well in the modern world is in a sense about reprogramming our natural instincts to avoid stress, to avoid pain, and to avoid struggle. And here's what I mean. What has made us survive this long as a species, at least 2 years. I think we've been in existence for I haven't done the math. It's like at least a decade. I mean, we have been around for like a decade. That's amazing. We can survive because of our ability to figure out ways to conserve. Remember I said we're a conserving a species? I almost did a full episode called The Conservation Core because that's our whole species. We conserve. We are trying to avoid stress. We are trying to avoid pain. We are trying to avoid struggle. That is built into our very, very hard wiring. We don't want to work hard because we don't want to expend that stuff because that breaks us down. The problem is in the modern world, technology plays into this. Quick fixes play into this. We ourselves know how to market to this instinct. Products know how to market to this instinct. We want less discomfort. And there is money to be had when I can tell you that my product or my approach or my DVD is going to make it easier for you to live happy and healthy. Most times it's not, but if I can convince you that it will, you'll buy it, most likely. It's the very instinct that we prey upon, much like the way that we're attracted to bright colors of like strawberries, but then we have the food coloring that makes products that are unnatural look natural, and they play to this very basic, what I always say, like we're a natural being in an unnatural world. We're still animals and we have these very basic things. Well, as an animal, it behooves us to not burn ourselves up, to not push ourselves too hard. In a sense, just to kind of bring this back to the way that I've been eating, the amount of just constant caloric intake is difficult for us. It is hard for us to deal with that level of stuff. The body is actually quite good at conserving and knowing how to sort of manipulate. But again, what do they do to make us eat that much? Because we'd never eat that much of lettuce, just plain lettuce. We would never constantly feed ourselves natural food that's unflavored and unsalted and unsweetened. We would never do that because we would have a natural shutoff, like we're done here. But because we know how to artificially flavor food to make it just intensely pleasurable, then we disable that sort of natural instinct to conserve. And I think that's what I'm seeing in not eating as much is my body's conservation instinct at play. It's doing quite well with less in a much, much more clear, you know, clear of thinking sort of way. Clarity of thought, I would say, if I could, you know, form a sentence and all that. But to bring it back around to the point that I was making is this: to live well in today's world where we have these kinds of technologies at play, playing to this conservation and making it so that we're doing less than we'd ever do in nature, even in the context of conserving, technology allows us to just not get up and even walk 5 feet to the TV because we have a remote, right? And so we have to, this is what I believe, to live better in the modern world, reprogram this natural instinct. And we need to reprogram it by bringing it a little bit more to where it intentionally was supposed to be, where its natural design is supposed to be. Yes, we conserve. Yes, we try to avoid stress of any kind as much as possible. We're wired for that. But because the world is designed to where what the reality is now we don't have to do anything, to bring it back to sort of its natural levels means bring back in some discomfort, to bring back in adaptive stress, not bad stress, not stress that debilitates us and weakens us and blows our immune systems out of the frickin' water, but little stress via, of course, the small steps that I talk about, a little bit of easy, you know, endurance exercise or whatever kind of exercise you like, movement of any kind, bringing these things back in, engaging in our lives in a way that is changes things, improves things, manipulates things, challenges us. This sort of brings, it doesn't upset the natural instinct because we're not burning ourselves out, because that's antithetical to our natural design, but it's sort of bringing it back up to natural levels. Because right now, like I said, we have the ability to do just nothing. And that's because we're so good at conserving using our brains that we can invent things that make us do less and less and less over time. And that's not having a good effect on us. I'll just put it that way. It's not making us healthy. It's sort of swung the opposite way now. Like, there's no physical need to do anything anymore. There used to be, even in the modern, you know, in the developed age where we have cities and towns and everything, we did stuff. We used to farm and move around. We didn't have cars. We would walk places, and cities still do. New York people are walking around. But for a lot of people, they don't have to, including me. Like, I don't have to do much. I walk out my door into my car and I drive to work and I get out of the car and I walk into work. Hence, me making little moves through my integrated exercise, which now I'm doing lunges, by the way. It's working out phenomenally for my running. That's also helping really great, I think. And pull-ups. But doing these things that are intentional hard work in that sort of context, bringing things back into balance a little bit more. And that is the training, and that is the small steps, and that is maintaining a step list, and that is even putting intentional deep breaths, which are very relaxing, but it's a new thing. It's a new shaking up of your world thing. It's an intentional thing that takes mental and physical energy to complete. Yes, it's a minimal way, and that's great, because you're just putting it in there. Dig? All right. So that's just what I think. I mean, that's... to live well, it seems to me always that the whole quick fix model, we know that's not working. We know that not having to engage at all in our lives because things are just fed to us calorically and, you know, mental nutrition and all these things I talk about, that just the bad news on such an accessible little device in our pockets, it's bringing us down in general. And to come back at that as a small step is to say, yeah, that's there, and I know that's there, and I'm going to bring in a little bit of the struggle back into the game because it's necessary to break through the quick rut that we can get into just day to day. Because it's weird not having to do anything to get a ton of calories. Let's say it's for most of us, unless we're starving, we have just a plethora of calories. I've talked about this a million times. It's never like that difficult. We're overfeeding ourselves to just an amazing amount. And so today, when I don't eat, it's not because I don't have access to food. I have to make an intentional decision not to. And this is a little more extreme than I've gone, but you guys know, if you've listened to me before, hashtag dial back day. I mean, this was the inception of the dial back day for me, which was to choose a day where I specifically didn't do all the other things that I do most of the time, to make a conscious effort to say, okay, on the food realm, I'm dialing that back in an effort to bring up all the other non-food related things of my life, and to see as the challenge of that, how that is, and to look at that. And it is still a challenge. It is a mental challenge to not have a beer, to not have dessert, to eat, you know, just fruit all day, or now to eat nothing until 5, even though I'm not hungry. I'm not starving myself. If I always was like open, like last 2 weeks, like if I feel hungry or if I feel wonky or dizzy, then I'm going to go down and get some fruit. Whoop-de-doo. It's hugely healthy. No problem. It's not about weight loss, nothing. It's easy, but it's an intentional injection of balance into my own life, to balance that natural instinct to avoid the pain and struggle. We kind of have to bring in some artificial, in a way, manufactured, constructed pain and struggle just to kind of level the playing field a little bit. Okay. Why did I bring this up? Because this podcast is part and parcel to that. Again, the donations have been amazing and they're great. I mean, people have donated $5 a month or $2 a month. I mean, it's awesome. It's just amazing. But it's not, I'm not making a living at this podcast. Maybe I will eventually. I don't know. Don't care. It's not really why I do that. And the donations are just amazingly helpful to me to do this, but I'm doing it because it's of the bigger pictures. I hope you guys know that they're there. Otherwise, why would I come here every week to live my own life in a purposeful way, in a way that has meaning. These are things for me, but make no mistake, this is hard work. It would be totally easy for me and much easier not to come here every week and do this podcast. And I just be clear, if you're just joining me, like, this is zero complaint. I freaking love this podcast. I've done 156 episodes, obviously, unless I'm just a glutton for punishment. I do this because I love it. It's a labor of love. Small steppers, a labor of love. This is not to get new agey, but learning how to truly love yourself in a way that says, now I'm accepting of the labor that it takes to live the life I want to live. That's what this podcast is part of for me, and the YouTube videos too. I don't make money from YouTube. There's no monetary value, but there's a whole hell of a lot of lifestyle value. I mean, huge. I'm up till 1 a.m. editing video. Trust me, it's easier for me not to edit videos every week. But the joy of interacting with you guys and getting feedback and interacting with people who are commenting on the videos and just the social aspect of it, it's like a freaking drug. I mean, it's a drug. It's something I look forward to the same way that I look forward to running and eating well, and the obvious, which is I've talked about a million times, being with my family, like the very core things that are the drug of modern world that are way bigger than any sort of actual payoff. And the fact is that this is something I kind of grappled with a little bit. I do talk about myself here. This is my experience. I talk about feedback I get from clients, from you guys, podcast listeners, and people who follow my YouTube channel. And it's because I believe that we are way more similar than we are different. I believe that this sort of this idea that we have sometimes, because we're so internal and there's so many things that we don't want to share, that we're sort of in it by ourselves, and we're absolutely not in it by ourselves, no matter how slick we may present ourselves in public. And I thought from the very beginning, you know, even when I wrote my book, and there were some things in my book that I just had a hard time admitting, but that I just put out there because in the beginning I knew that this was the way that I wanted to go, which is that I could spend my mental energy working on some BS persona or some sort of thing that when somebody got to know me, they'd be like, oh my gosh, he's completely different than what he does in the podcast. And that may be, you guys actually don't know that. But for people who know me, you can talk to Bree. Go to her pod, go to her freaking thing, her blog that's so good, Never Just a Mom, and go email her and ask her if I'm completely different than what I am in the podcast. She'll go, unfortunately, no. Unfortunately, he is not at all different. That's the unfortunate thing that I have to run with the guy who is that guy in the podcast. But the fact is, in this effort to be more transparent and then to be more confident in the work that I do, is to achieve my own umbrella goal, which is to do work in my life that is a contribution to the world. That is, for whatever you may disagree, but it's in my mind a positive contribution, that I'm trying to help people live better lives. And that's why I come here. And so in the Happy Anniversary to Me episode, it's why I bring it up this episode, okay? It's because I do love what I do. And so just allow me this moment to be like, holy crap, 3 years without missing a week. Just give me that. Let me have that before you hit stop. 3 freaking years of a weekly podcast that I have not missed a single week. It's proven. Go look at the postings. It's there. And it is a mind blower to me that this kind of snuck up on me where I joked last week. I kind of did the math all at once. I was like, holy crap, like this is my 3rd year anniversary. It's amazing, and not nearly as amazing as having to have met the people that I have met and interacted with, and clients that have come to me from this podcast or learning about me and said, hey, let's work together, and meeting those people all over the country of the United States and just doing this amazing stuff and talking to people literally all over the world, getting emails from people all over the world and interacting with you guys. And it's just like, just nuts. And I'm in a little crappy room right now that is way neater than it was 2 weeks ago. I'm not saying that, but I'm sitting in this room and you guys are listening to it wherever you are. Let's keep this part of our lives intact. Let's keep the ability that we can actually use technology to our benefit to help each other and to connect in a positive way, and not in necessarily a Facebook, I'm going to take you down and get into an argument with you every 5 seconds way, but a Strava kind of let's give each other like a thumbs up kind of thing. And there was this one comment I got on one of my YouTube videos last week, and I can't remember which, it was an older video, and she says, I wish there was a way that I could quote love this video. And it's like, you don't need to take the time to do that. You just do it because that's an awesome thing to freaking do. And I hope that that makes her feel great. I hope that that made her freaking day to do that, because it made my freaking day to hear that. It's like, you don't need to take that time to do that. But the fact that you did is just the best of humanity. It's the best freaking part of our lives. So to summarize, as if I was reading anything that I've just talked about for the last whatever minutes that I'm doing here. Speaking of podcasts, I've been listening to this one episode of the WTF podcast with Marc Maron. If you guys haven't heard it, I don't know him at all. I'm not vouching. Some are hit and miss, gotta tell you. But I'll catch some now and then. One of them was recently with this author named Laura Albert. She wrote a book called Sarah by this pseudonym J.T. Leroy. There's a new documentary out about her. But the truth is, I know Laura because she's friends with Jeff Stanford, and she comes up to the inn. I've known her for years, and she comes up and we hang out. And I know her son really well, and he's lived at the inn for a little while, so I have a personal connection. So it's, when I see her show up on the WTF podcast, I'm like, I got to check this out, because she's nutty, nut in a just a totally, like, you just can't go listen to the episode or go watch the documentary. It's called Author or something. But Laura Albert, she's absolutely just nutty, nut in a great way, in a great way. But I can't even give it justice. I can't even do the real justice of what the nutty, nut level is there. But just check it out. Okay, so she in this episode, I'm listening to it, and she finishes up, and I'm going, how cool is this, right? She's obviously highly intelligent, and she's, you know, brilliant writer and stuff. So there's a, through the nutty nut, you're like, holy crap. And she said, just this throwaway comment she said that I wanted to finish up this episode with, and she said, and I'm paraphrasing, but she said, you know, every day we get up and we choose either fear or faith. And she sort of threw that up there. She's like, you know, you get up every morning, you just, you know, you choose either fear or faith. And what an amazing thing, because it's sort of locked up to where that I was, you know, to where I was, my brain was this week in crafting this week's episode and sort of talking about in my own mind what I was going to put forth. And all I would say is, yeah, and I've talked about faith, but probably not enough. And there is a level of faith here that we get up out of bed to go into our lives that we need to encompass and embrace. And it is a level of faith. And I've even said it with regards to the small steps. There's a point at which, as much as I argue for when we do these things that are, you know, we add steps that are minimally stressful so that we just sort of can't not do them, like who can't do one deep breath? But then there's that level where it's like, you still got to have some level of faith that doing this is going to do anything. And that's sort of that thing where you either trust me or you don't. And that's for me, the Wim Hof thing. Like, there's a level of faith that I'm doing. It seems good. I've read the documentation, but I don't know. It's a certain level of faith that I'm embarking on this thing. And I have to have, in my own life, a certain amount of intrinsic value associated with any action to say, like, even if it doesn't have the results that are promised, is the process going to be fulfilling for me? Is the process going to result in self-knowledge and growth on a personal level? If so, then if the result doesn't occur, then whoop-de-frickin'-do. In a way, if I don't finish the 50K is a perfect example. Like, yeah, that's my technical goal, but I have chosen a process whereby I'm enjoying this and growing from it, so it's making the result of actually finishing the race a lot less important. I want to see if I can actually finish the race in this context, but worst case scenario, I'm doing some cool stuff that I wasn't doing before. That is the growth and evolution of me and therefore you and everybody listening to this, because we're the human species that thrives on adaptive stress, on change, on growth, and on evolution. So that we get up and we choose fear or faith. And what I wanted to just point out is it's not saying that I'm going to choose faith and therefore fear doesn't factor in. It's just they're both there for the taking. And you can choose to go with faith because there's fear. And I would add a third option, and that is that I would add knowledge. And I wouldn't say that you can choose knowledge independent of fear and faith, because I think they're all completely intermingled. But I think that there's that middle ground there where the knowing minimizes the need of faith, and the knowing makes fear less strong. It weakens fear. The more we know, the less fear we feel. And in fact, sometimes faith can come from a fear of not knowing. And some things we just can't know. But I think that when we value knowledge and knowing things, and you know where I'm going with this, I hope, but it's about us. It's getting to know ourselves that minimizes fear and maximizes our lives and actually minimizes the need to have faith because we know a little bit more. I don't think it takes either of those things off the table. I don't think knowledge makes fear go away or faith go away. Like I said, even with the small steps, which I believe is the single best way to incorporate long-term change, there is a level of faith. I'm just trying to minimize the need for that. I'm not asking for big leaps where you're like closing your eyes and jumping off a cliff. I hope this works out. I'm minimizing the cost here if it doesn't. I'm minimizing that if it doesn't work, you will not have lost a ton. You don't have to turn, like I say always, you don't have to turn your lives upside down to be a small stepper, okay? It's the opposite of that. The worst case is that deep breath doesn't turn into anything and you just took some deep breaths along the way. But more often than not, those little things result in more knowledge about the life you want to live, more knowledge about who you are as a person. And that knowledge can also bring us into a world where we're not susceptible to the other things that we know that can make us angry because of the news and all these things that we have at our disposal, all this information that can bring us down, that the more we know ourselves brings us into a world free of the fear. That's there, but we're not tied by it. And even to some extent, free of the faith that we have, but it's not dictating us, it's not preventing us, it's not keeping us back. There's a very, very subtle and delicate balance between fear, faith, and what we know. And ultimately, it's those three things and the intermingling of those three things in a balanced way that get us to ideally a life that we want to live. We have the fear that's not going away. Is it dictating our actions or inaction? We have faith. Is that preventing us from getting to know ourselves better because we just go, well, I just have faith, and so I'm just going to just do that and not pay attention to anything in me because I just figure it's going to work out. And then there's that knowledge where we go, I want to know enough to live a good life, but if I just put all my eggs in the knowledge basket and just try to learn more and more and more, then I don't live the life that I want to live. And there's just that delicate balance. And I come here every week in hopes that bringing you the knowledge of certain actual things, but also the knowledge that there's a limit at which you know enough. And that's for you to determine. When you go, I know enough about healthy eating, I can now put my eggs in the how do I get this done basket, because that's mostly what I come here every week to discuss. Yes, I talk about the particulars But really what I'm talking about is, when do you realize, I know enough about the life I want to live. I know enough about who I am. I know enough about what it is to move my body and eat basically healthy food. I don't need diets and labels. I basically have a good idea. And if I keep doing more research into this now, I'm prevented from living my life. And sometimes, you know, we are afraid of jumping actually in and making that change, because what if it doesn't work? What if I fail? What if I don't do it perfectly? All these things that come out. And there's the faith that comes into play there. So it's, again, it's that, all that kind of delicate balance that I want you guys to engage in your lives. And yes, I'm asking you to have a little faith that what I'm doing is going to be good for you long term. There's no getting around it, because you've never done it, and you got to kind of take that leap. I'm just trying to make the leap as minimally stressful as possible, okay? So that the process along the way is pleasurable, and that you're learning about yourself, and that eventually long term, you don't need me or anything that I say, because you're just on your way. All right. So, 156 weeks in a row, you guys. I'm not even patting myself on the back. I'm just more like, holy mother, what have I been doing for every week? It's been really fun, and I'm not planning on shutting this puppy down. Let's tell you that much. This isn't like, and so this is my last episode. It's not, okay? I'll be here next week, you know, with 157, just anti-climax embodied in the number 157. That's the most boring number all of a sudden. All right, you guys. You guys are doing awesome. Again, appreciate the donations. You know, if you can kick me $2 a month, I'm not even joking. I mean, people have come through with that, and just incredible, and more, and then less, and it doesn't matter. It's amazing, and I really appreciate the support, and I try to pay it forward. In fact, now I've inspired myself to go in and immediately go donate to that one podcast that I was referring to. You guys are awesome. Email me podcast@sidgarzahillman.com if you have any questions or comments or whatever. I love ratings and or reviews on iTunes. I'll be in San Francisco to speak at the World Veg Fest on October 9th. I'll be there all day. And then Atlanta Veg Fest on November 12th. If you guys are in the neighborhood, please come by and say hello. I'll help bring some WWID bracelets, which, by the way, I'm giving away for free. Whatever you order, I'll throw in a few extra WWID bracelets. So go to sidgarzahillman.com and check and see. I am toying with the idea. I'm not even toying with it. I'm about to order new shirts, different shirts. So I'm so excited about this. I almost can't contain myself, but I'm not going to announce it yet until they're on their way. All right. You guys are awesome. Treat yourselves well. Treat yourselves well. This is real. This is the basic stuff. And I'll be here next week to hopefully hammer this home and keep you engaged in the lives you want to live. All right, you guys. Thanks to everybody. And I'll talk to you next week. And in the meantime, be well.
And still we hope as if the hope makes us still. As if a glance ahead that will save us how we are blind. We might as well.